There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Episode 58, the Daily Intermission Podcast. Greg in studio, Justin Paul, JP holding it down in New York. JP, what's up, fella? How you doing, man?
Doing unreal. The sun is shining like perfectly today. Weather and temperature is primed. And what we got going on today here at on campus with the hockey team and everything is a little Ryder Cup action within the team.
Get out of here.
Yeah, how our hockey team is built, it's like probably like 55%, 60% American. And then the other 45% is like Canada mostly. But then we have like Swedish, Finnish, Czech, Slovakian, Latvian. So we got the Canadians and the Euros on one team. We got the Americans on the other. It's you're paired up in teams of two. It's scramble for 18 holes. And you combine your whole total score with all the pairings on one side against the other side. We have some rain coming on Saturday, Sunday, so we just made it a one-round event. But either way, it gets pretty intense whenever we do that little American versus the world situation. So fired up for that today. That'll be awesome. But other than that, and other than watching sports, it's been all about softball here on campus. We've got an intramural softball league. There's about eight teams. Our team has two teams. The other team, the older guys, the seniors and fifth years, et cetera, they're three-time champs. Us younger guys put a team together. We're going to try to challenge them a little bit. We got playoffs coming up. So we'll have to see how it goes. We're definitely the underdog. We call ourselves the Athletics of this league. Kind of just put a scrappy team together. Not much of a salary cap or budget to spend. So, but it's been fun. What have you been up to?
Man, there's nothing better than slow pitch softball, man. Yeah. It is unreal, man. Bat on ball, left, right, and center. A lot of defensive plays. It's good fun, man. But
yeah, man.
Before I get into kind of breaking down everything in my world, and we got a few topics that we're going to dive into here in the pregame show, I must give a shout out to our friends at Manscaped. Guys, go over to manscaped.com, check out their plethora of products, the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker 2.0, get your nose all dialed in, your ears dialed in. We know how unattractive it is having nose hairs dangling out of the schnoz, so make sure you go get cleaned up with all the beautiful products over at manscaped.com. Use the code TDI for 20% off and free shipping. Go check it out, folks. But yeah, it's been a long week. I've told Justin, so I spent most of the week in the city. I've got family that lives there, and they took a trip to Florida, and they messaged me a few weeks back, and they said, Greg, do you mind coming in and looking after the house in Halifax? And I agreed to it, but it's been it's been a bit of a shit show because I spent the week in Ottawa. I had a few days at home, and then I'm in Halifax. Like, I just have been so out of sorts with my routine, and I don't like living that way. I don't like living in, you know, kind of foreign situations for more than a few weeks at a time, but we're past that. We're back in studio. We're back recording. So, and it's been fantastic. I mean, the sports content that we've got to talk about today, Justin, is just unbelievable, but it was a pretty quiet week, man. Not much golf, just a ton of sports consumption. But I did start a new show, and it's Ted Lasso, and a lot of the listeners will have dove in and watched Ted Lasso. Justin, have you watched Ted Lasso?
Yeah, I watched the first run. I want to say two or three seasons before COVID. Haven't got into the last one. I get back into a show. I like when there's a little bit of episodes, so I kind of binge a little bit.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I'm gonna get back into it, but. Yeah, I mean, I'll let you continue, but the first three seasons I watched them, I loved them. That show was unbelievable, first two or three, whatever it was. But yeah, you got unreal, right?
Yeah, it's not like I was a Game of Thrones junkie, you know, Breaking Bad. It's not that type of show. Like, it's a very easy watch. You've got Ted Lasso, what is it, Jason Sudeikis? A very, very lovable character in the show. And it's not one that you have to be, like, 100% tuned into all the time. But, yeah, there's just the character development of the different figures throughout the soccer team is awesome. I really enjoy it. So, for the listeners, if you haven't watched Ted Lasso, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, are you up to date on it? Because have you watched, like, the last few seasons? I know, because what I've heard is I watched the beginning and it was obviously a lot of comedy, phenomenal, like hilarious every episode.
Yeah.
I've heard it's a little bit become a little bit more, I want to say maybe emotional, not too like, sad or dramatic, but I think there's a little bit of that stuff in the last season. Sorry. No, I was just curious if you're up to date just because I've heard that a little bit, but either way, I'm going to be tuning in for it.
I binged it until like a few episodes into season three. So I'm not fully caught up, but it kind of changes from, you know, when the owner, I'm not going to give away too much, but obviously brings on Ted Lasso, a football coach from the United States, to bring and, you know, brings him on to kind of, you know, make this team a laughing stock and, you know, obviously operates in a very unique way. But as she kind of, you know, as Ted grows on her and as their relationship builds and as actually, you know, she enjoys Ted and she wants success for the team, some different relationships start to build throughout the show. And it's a really cool show. I hope that you guys, enjoy it. But Justin, in regard to TV shows, you know, do you have one that's like, yeah, that was one that I had to binge? What are some of your top TV shows that you've had in rotation? Obviously, us being huge sports guys, we're not oftentimes in tune fully with the TV side of things, but I definitely find time to binge every once in a while.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's two different groups of people. There's people that like to watch everything. They're all in movies, TVs. They kind of spread themselves. I'm in the group that watches something that they love all the time. So I've seen The Office 9 times through completely. I've seen How I Met Your Mother either 6 or 7 full, Friends 4 or 5, and How Much Mother, Friends, The Office. Yeah. I roll through those three. Just, I had a stretch there. I just rolled through those three, maybe for 3 years. It was absolutely ridiculous. Office is my show. Office is my number one. That show to me is, you can put it on, it's one of those shows you put it on in the background. It's unbelievable. Oh, and Modern Family. Modern Family for me. That was a show I watched once when I was younger growing up. If you could watch that show again now, that's what I just did. Man, it might be my number one show with The Office. It is unbelievably funny. It's definitely worth another go around. Have you seen Modern Family?
I haven't done any of those. So that I haven't been an Office guy, which I've been told for years, like, Greg, you're an idiot for not binging The Office. Modern Family, I've seen. I mean, I'm the biggest Sofia Vergara guy in the world. So I've got to dive into that. I know it's a great series, so maybe that'll be on the docket, is to fire up some Office this weekend. And Dunder Mifflin,
I got the t-shirts, man. I got the t-shirts and everything. Give it a try, Greg. Gotta give it a go.
I'll give it a go for sure. Just another note before we dive into things. In quarter one today, we got the NFL. In quarter two, we'll get the NHL. Quarter three, NBA. And then obviously in quarter four, we'll bring it home with a little bit of miscellaneous stuff with the PGA Tour and MLB. But Jack Harlow, I don't know what your music taste is like, but I'm a Jack Harlow guy. I do like my rap and my hip hop, and Jack Harlow released an album today. I haven't dove into it, but I'm looking forward to opening up there. But Justin, what type of, just for the listeners, you know, what type of tunes are you tuning into? I'm a big country guy as well. Very odd. Country, rap, hip hop.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like this. Maybe we'll keep the music stuff for start of episodes, because I've listened to the new Luke Combs album probably 15, 16 times. It's been out for about a month, I believe now. Massive Luke Combs, massive, obviously, Morgan Wallen.
Yep.
Big time country guy. Looking to go to a country concert this summer in Toronto. So that's something. I haven't been to a concert, period. I haven't been to any concert, period, yet in my life. So, I mean, definitely got to knock that one off the bucket list. So, but I'm a huge country guy. Obviously, I get a lot of the hip hop and rap being, I mean, on hockey team, pregame and working out stuff. Massive country guy. So that's my genre for sure. So, love to sing. Not very good at it. The guys give me heck because I don't know any lyrics ever, but I just sing as for pleasure no matter what, anyways. But, I've seen Jack Harlow. Jack Harlow's, he's all over the social medias all the time. He's kind of everywhere nowadays, eh?
Yeah, he's kind of blown up in the last few years. Lyrical, he's extremely talented. He's fun. He's fun to listen to. So he's actually got a song with Drake, which is really good. Churchill Downs. They went to the Kentucky Derby last year, rented out like a big, private suite and filmed the rap video. But it's all good. The music scene's buzzing. But the sports world is buzzing right now with the NBA and NHL first round playoffs. I mean, we've got enough to talk about, as you listeners know. I mean, we'll dive in for about 45 minutes talking about these series. But then you throw the NFL draft at us. I mean, we got ourselves a content packed episode. Let's get right into things. But in quarter one here in the NFL, But we've got a few things to talk about because Lamar Jackson. Yeah. Obviously, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for the guy. He ends up signing the most lucrative deal in NFL history with the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar staying in Baltimore. What are you thinking, Justin? I mean, I as OBJ signed and as kind of things on that front quieted down from the rest of the league, you thought that maybe the rest of the league had an opportunity to pounce on this guy if there was going to be any teams that were going to take a shot at him. But he ends up staying in Baltimore.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first thing I just want to bring up as we talk about this is very interesting for me in terms of the dollar amount that ended up being signed. Because, first of all, he's his own agent. Obviously, that dynamic was going on, so he knew he was going to hardball. But for me, what I saw was when he requested a trade, one or two things I assumed happened. Either his request for trade worked perfectly as he planned. I mean, I assume this is how it went. Because the Ravens said to themselves, okay, hang on, like maybe they got a lot of offers, et cetera. And they said, you know what? Someone's going to sign this guy and pay this guy for years to come. Maybe we're making the wrong decision here. We got to get all over this guy. And he got $260 million and a phenomenal deal. The reason I bring that up is because the second side of it is I thought when he requested a trade fairly recently, didn't get moved. I was worried for him that the lack of interest potentially and the lack of other teams willing to make that call or make an offer that shows his value to the Ravens as well would have given the Ravens more leverage to say, hang on a second, man, like you asked for a trade, we've been open to phone calls, they haven't come. That just confirms even more like your type of player, etc., whatever it is, isn't worth that top dollar. But again, doesn't get moved. We've been waiting all year and some now. And he still gets a top dollar deal. I know the guaranteed money is $185 million. I'm not sure. I'd have to look back at the Jalen Hurts deal and Watson and stuff like that. I don't know that that's the highest by any means, right? I think that's a little bit lower than some. So that's a big factor nowadays in these negotiating for the QBs. But, what'd you think? I mean, I'm not shocked he resigned, right? I'm not shocked about it, but for that dollar amount, I was a little bit for how long they sat out.
Yeah, I mean, to be, you know, the highest paid quarterback, and were they waiting for a guy like Jalen Hurts to sign to kind of, you know, for some comparable? Like, it just seems a little bit surprising to me. Like you said, you know, coming out, like, I didn't know if he was going to get or surpass Jalen Hurts, but he ends up, you know, getting a bigger number. And I mean, I guess you got to give credit to Lamar Jackson. I mean, you know, for a guy who doesn't have an agent playing hardball with the team, you know, you could be walking on eggshells, you know, it can be a dicey process, but you know, credit to him. He gets the big contract. And I mean, I think you said it in the Chalkboard app as well, Justin. This team is a very strong football team. Their defense as well.
Yeah.
They traded for Roquan Smith as well, right? From the Chicago Bears. I mean, this is with joining Patrick Queen and that linebacking crew. I mean, Marlon Humphrey on the outside. I mean, this team is there. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with in that division. And they just got better for sure. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this Baltimore Ravens team gels next season.
And this was one of my predictions last year for Super Bowl preseason. Like, this was a team where Lamar got hurt the year prior to last year when they had a phenomenal record and he couldn't get healthy, and that's what knocked him out. So my mindset was, okay, if this guy gets healthy and stays healthy, this team is built to win. This team's absolutely loaded. Excuse me. And you go into this year now, and this is kind of what I was going to pivot off of, and you went right to it. Lamar re-signs, and all this worry about the Ravens is like, okay, like everyone's been off this Ravens team because of the Lamar thing, because they didn't finish well with Huntley. This team with Lamar healthy last year was leading that division by a couple games, and they had a good record. They had a good record when Lamar was healthy. But if you remember, the two or three losses they had were off really, really amateur mistakes.
That's right.
Turnovers, bad stops. Like, this team could have been 8-1 or 7-1 when Lamar was healthy. So you forget about that when
they were blowing
ends.
Huge leads. Huge leads.
Massive leads.
Yeah.
And then they go out and draft, we'll get into it, but Smith and Jigma, the best wide receiver in the draft, and they signed, Zay Flowers, the Ravens drafted Zay Flowers, and then they signed OBJ. And the number one concern for this team was their receiving core around Lamar. You sign Lamar and you add the receiving core, the defense is still phenomenal. might be a pretty good look here for the Ravens going into next season.
And you got Duvernay as well. Like, we kind of forget about him. He was a little bit banged up last season, but I mean, this guy's shown some glimpses of some very high talent. So, I mean, you throw Mark Andrews in that mix as well. I mean, the top three tight end in the NFL in terms of pass catching, for sure. This is going to be a team that's going to be interesting for sure. So I know Baltimore Ravens fans, go ahead.
Yeah. And a new offensive coordinator. That's the other thing. So this whole run heavy game, like pure run style, what I've seen from this new offensive coordinator, what I've been hearing is with these new receivers, they're going to be able to take a little bit of that workload off Lamar without actually restricting their offense. So I thought that's a big piece too, because this Ravens offense might look a little different.
Yeah, man, and defenses. I mean, they play the Ravens with guys in the box. They're stacking the box, right? Like, I mean, they know Lamar can run. They know they're trying to get the ball to their back. So, you know, if they can find a way to implement some, a strong, competent passing game, defenses are really going to have to take some players, put them in the secondary, and that opens up the entire playbook for the Ravens. So it's going to be exciting. Just before we get into the draft as well, Aaron Rodgers the Green Bay Packers announced that they have finalized the deals to send Aaron Rodgers to the New York Jets. So Aaron Rodgers heading to Broadway. It's going to be exciting, man. I'm really excited for a guy, of this caliber to go to the Jets. It's been so long, since they've really been, a real contender to compete in that AFC East. I guess we could throw it back to maybe 17 when Mark Sanchez brought them to the AFC Championship. I'm not sure if that's correct in terms of the year, but Aaron Rodgers is going to be a nice breath of fresh air. I mean, you think about the quarterbacks that they've been dealing with Zach Wilson and Joe Flacco, but you know what? This is exciting. I think Mike White as well, but Aaron Rodgers to the Jets. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, like you said it all, and everyone knows kind of Rodgers and what he's about, so that's not much there. But the one thing I wanted to bring up, so obviously we know the AFC West with how loaded it is with Chargers, Raiders, Chiefs, and Broncos. This AFC East, you got Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs in this Bills roster. You got a Miami Dolphins with Tua, Hill, Waddle, and the defense they have.
Chosen Anderson.
Exactly. And then you're sitting there now. Rodgers gets added into this mix. And the Patriots aren't an automatic win when you go into Gillette or anything like that. So, like, this is going to be a dogfight. Like, I can't say, like, Bills are obviously the favorite. Like, they've been that way for the last few years, but I could see this division being right down to the last few games this season. Every matchup in that division against each other is going to be absolutely massive.
This is just, this division, this AFC East has just flipped up on its end, because for 20 years, it was, you locked in New England and you pretty much rode off the rest of the teams, but that's not the case anymore. Actually, I would say that New England has the most question marks surrounding them going into this season. The more that I think about it, and obviously I'm hard on Mac Jones, call him Muffin Jones. I'm not sold on him, but Bill O'Brien coming in, his former coach from Alabama, offensive coordinator from Alabama, obviously has had some experience in the NFL. I never want to write off a guy like Bill Belichick, and bringing in a guy like Gesicki. He's a phenomenal tight end, and I don't know why they want to go with this two pass catching tight end system, but it seems like they've got something that they want to work with here. And Jonnu Smith obviously didn't work out in New England, but I'm not going to write these guys off, man. I'm not. There's a lot of noise around Mac Jones. Is this a guy that could come silence everyone? Could they get off to a great start? And this division's going to be an absolute gauntlet, similar to what we're seeing in the AL East and the MLB right now. But I'm really excited for this division, and it's going to be just a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, and I don't want to be I'm not a Patriots hater by any means, but one thing that does concern me a little bit, and it happens with a lot of dynasties and perennial contenders, they hang on a little too long. And I think it's also a lot to do with Belichick being there and obviously the years they've had. Like, they're not going to win this division, and they should know that with Bills, Jets, Dolphins, like talked about. But they're also building a team that's competent enough to, like, just miss the wild card or just get the wild card, that you worry, hey, this is usually the right time to rebuild when the other three are in the three teams in your division are just absolutely going at a dogfight. But if they don't take advantage of, you hate to say it because you don't tank, but like, if you don't take advantage of what you're probably not going to be able to do, which is win the division, and you just kind of sit at that below 500, you don't get a top pick, or you're not committed to drafting like your future QBs, et cetera, because you're hanging on to Jones, et cetera. I just don't want to see the Patriots become that
no man's land is what we call
purgatory.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
No man's land.
Like, yeah, yep. I'd rather see commit 2 or 3 years and then become great again in 3 years. Like, I we'll see. We'll see for sure. But yeah. Tough division, to say the least.
I think it's Bill Belichick hanging on for his last few years, just saying, listen, yeah. I want one more. I want to prove that I can do it without Tom, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we'll see what happens. Let's get into the NFL draft, because it is so clear cut that the NFL draft is the most exciting draft in professional sports. These guys that get drafted on night one and even two and three, throughout the draft, these guys make an impact in year one, and we don't always see that across sports. I mean, whether it's through injury or whether it's them winning jobs, these rookies coming out of college are ready to play on the big stage. It's so exciting, and obviously there's been a lot of hype surrounding the NFL draft, but let's get right into it, man. The Carolina Panthers obviously traded with the Chicago Bears earlier, and they go with a guy from Alabama. A lot of question marks around a lot of these quarterbacks, but they go with Bryce Young. A lot of the scouts think he's undersized, but he plays, you know, he seems like he's a, you know, an efficient quarterback in regard to throwing and escaping the pocket and running, but I know he's put on a lot of weight, so we'll see. What'd you think about the Bryce Young pick to Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, this seems, from what everything we see, as the right pick. I mean, QBs are definitely the hardest position to
evaluate.
Most comfortable about.
Yeah,
exactly. Evaluate. Yeah. So they're comparing, his player comparison is Drew Brees. You got to tell me if that's more of a size situation, or they truly believe that's the talent and skill set he has. But yeah, it's weird because we're in a draft where I don't have much comments. It's like, I need to see it. I need to see what results of it, because we don't have like the Josh Allen arms coming out of this draft. We don't have Lamar and his Heisman winning running ability. Like, these are QBs that, yeah, they're great in college. They're on winning teams for the most part, those top two picks with Stroud and Young. But like, I mean, I'm not sitting here expecting absolute greatness, Hall of Fame talent, like QBs. I could be wrong for sure. But again, that's the tough part about QBs. So I think it's the right QB to take from everything I've seen. But not much certainty with any of these three QBs drafted so far. What about you?
Well, I find it so interesting in the NFL draft. So obviously we have three quarterbacks going the first four picks, and we'll get into it. But so these teams, it's a roulette. I mean, it's rolling the dice, because you never really know if these guys are going to end up. I mean, probably if you looked at the odds or the percentage chance that all three of these guys are going to be great quarterbacks, it's very close to zero. I mean, maybe one of these guys ends up being a Pro Bowler and really turns around the franchise, and that's their guy. But historically speaking, you know, only, you know, one of these guys are going to work out and be that franchise quarterback. So you've got three out of the first four picks going quarterback. What that does is it just bumps all of the talent at cornerback, at D end, at interior D line, at offensive line, down to the teams who have their quarterback. So that it just stresses, you know, you need to find your quarterback, and the teams that have a quarterback are at such an advantage when it comes to drafting. But then we get Houston, and I loved what Houston did here. Obviously they had the number two pick. They ended up trading it as well and getting that number three pick from Arizona, and they go CJ Stroud, obviously quarterback from Ohio State, and they draft Will Anderson, an edge kind of outside linebacker, D end from Alabama. Loved what they did, got their guy on defense, got their quarterback of the future. The Houston Texans kind of turned things around in two picks. I loved what they did. I loved, you know, the aggression and going up and getting two guys. And, you know, I'm not sure if Will Anderson's the most talented defensive player in the draft, but he's certainly up there. And you know, they get two great picks in the top three of the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I thought this was a phenomenal draft. I mean, they you can't ask for more than having the two and three and going out and getting your QB of now and a phenomenal edge rusher from Alabama. Just to pivot a little bit with Young as it relates to this QB from Alabama. I quickly put it up in here, and I don't, like, am I missing something? Like, QB and Alabama's aren't something that's had a ton of success in the NFL. Again, I could be missing someone, but like, when I look at Stroud and I watch Stroud in the college football playoff,
that game versus Georgia,
that's a QB that he had to do everything he can to will his team in a way, offensively at least, to score points. And he did phenomenal. And I think of Justin Fields, who also came out of Ohio State, a guy who's able to take less talent around him and make something happen, running the ball, making some throws when needed. But again, being able to scramble, make something out of nothing in a way. And I almost wonder, for the Alabama QBs, are they on such good teams that they don't have that college experience to learn how to struggle or make something out of nothing, etc. So Houston Texans, I like the chance on Stroud. A lot of people were thinking he could be the bust of the draft. That still might be true. But I like Stroud as a QB for this Houston team, a team who she's pretty good in what they added in this offseason. They made a good amount of moves. I believe they added Dalton Schultz at tight end. He's well experienced. They used some of their cap to add pieces on both sides of the ball, and then they get Will Anderson. So watch out for this Texas team. I don't know what the win number is looking like, but this Texas team, I think, I'm not going to say division. I'm not going to say anything crazy like that or playoffs, but this team plays in a division that's the Colts, Titans, and Jags. Colts will be playing Anthony Richardson day one, from what I heard last night. The Titans are playing, what, Tannehill if he stays healthy, and that old kind of roster that they're, again, trying to manage. And then, yeah, the Jags are for real. But what I'm saying is I think there's a couple wins within that division, and then if they have some easy games following, I could see them having a by far a better year than last year.
Yeah, they're going to turn things around this season for sure. I mean, they may not be a 12-win team, but they could definitely be a 7, 8, 9-win team if things go well, for sure.
Absolutely.
We look, and even D'Amico Ryan's coming in as the new head coach. I mean, very defensively, oriented, and we'll see. I mean, it may not be CJ Stroud's, offense right off the get-go. I mean, Davis Mills has shown, some potential. They got John Metchie, their first-round receiver, or second-round receiver from last year, who missed the entire season with leukemia. He's healthy. He looks like he's going to make a return, so that should be a nice, boost to that offense. So, obviously loved what the Texans did, and then we talked about it, or you kind of previewed it. The Colts at number four take Anthony Richardson, who was really just kind of came out of nowhere, I found, in the last few months. I mean, he wasn't really on anybody's like big time radar, I think, throughout the season. But obviously, people like what they see from Anthony Richardson. He's got a huge arm. He's very elusive, can run the ball. And we'll see. It'll be fun to see what the Colts do with like a guy with a talent like Anthony Richardson from Florida.
Absolutely. And just quickly to pivot to the Texans, just to finish up, I just remember this. They have Damian Pearson and Singletary at the backfield, so there won't be a ton of pressure on Stroud. Those are really, really good running backs back there. So, again, we'll see if Stroud gets day one, but that's going to be a pretty good offense. The people might be surprised. But Anthony Richardson, to me, is a shocking pick at four. From what I read pre-draft and et cetera on the mocks, Will Levis was kind of the mold that we've seen with the Colts in the past, Peyton Mannings, Andrew Luck type players. This seems like a lottery ticket pick from everything I've seen. This guy has not shown much in college. I think he had like maybe 12 or 13 starts, 14 starts. So lack of experience is massive. Didn't have phenomenal numbers, but it's that high upside running that teams are kind of all over right now. We've seen it in Fields. We talked about Lamar, et cetera. So yeah, whether or not the Colts can kind of get him right is in terms of passing and decision making would be a big thing. They have the Eagles offensive coordinator that got Jalen Hurts developed for the Philadelphia, and he's a running back. So I can see a lot of the same systems for Anthony Richardson and the Colts. So I hope he works out. I'd like to see the Colts be a contender. I feel like that's just a franchise that historically has been one, and I'd like to see him come back to that.
This is just pure speculation, but I don't know why I read Anthony Richardson and it just screams bust. It just screams like that name. I don't know why. It just Anthony Richardson just screams bust. Yeah, but anyway, it's crazy. I'll just talk about these next few picks. With the Seattle Seahawks, obviously get Devin Witherspoon, cornerback out of Illinois. That's an amazing pick. Obviously, we'll be playing alongside Tariq Woolen, who came out last year, was a phenomenal. Just an INT machine. He's a tall guy, 6'3". So that they got their cornerbacks there in Seattle. The Cardinals go with an offensive lineman for Ohio State, Paris Johnson Jr. Vegas goes for an edge rusher, Tyree Wilson. The Atlanta Falcons, bit of a surprise here, go for Bijan Robinson. Obviously, Tyler Allgeier showed some nice running last year. The Eagles. We'll talk about the Eagles as well. But Jalen Carter was a monster last year at Georgia. Obviously, with the car accident, there was a lot of speculation around him. What a grab for the Philadelphia Eagles there with Jalen Carter. And then a very surprise one at 12 when the Detroit Lions go grab Jahmyr Gibbs. So, I mean, that was a very surprising pick. But anything, just to round out this top 10, we won't go through the entirety of the draft, but any real surprises here, Justin?
No, you hit on the only two things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about the running backs picked, and one Bijan at 8 and one Jahmyr Gibbs. All I have for Bijan at 8 is a little bit surprising how high he was picked. Makes sense for Atlanta, high running offense. Not sure that was their biggest need, so interesting a little bit on what they sacrificed for their roster, especially when Jalen Carter goes next pick. But for Bijan Robinson, unbelievable amount of confidence put in him to take him at 8. He's going to get absolutely peppered. If he stays healthy, he's going to be an absolute weapon, maybe a top 5 running back in the league right away next year. Jahmyr Gibbs at 12 was interesting because they have David Montgomery and DeAndre Swift. So that was very interesting. That's telling that DeAndre Swift's on the way out. I don't think there's any way around it. It's going to be David Montgomery handles the first and second down, first and second down runs at short yardage. Jahmyr Gibbs will be the passing down guy. And maybe we see Jahmyr Gibbs take over later in the season as more of a Etienne role we saw with Jacksonville. And then Philadelphia Bulldogs, my team, taking Georgia players every draft now. We basically are building the 2021 Georgia Bulldogs championship team, so can't complain about that. The best defense in the nation. We've now taken 4 Georgia defensive players in the last 2 drafts.
Because at the 30th pick, they went Georgia as well, right?
Yeah, 30th pick, they took Nolan Smith, Georgia offensive linebackers, outside linebackers, so that's going to be massive. Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Jordan Davis, all added to that defense the last 2 years, so it's going to be pretty good replacements for what we've lost with the salary cap. But yeah, that's all I had with the draft. Excited for the next few rounds here, but nice to get that taste of NFL back, even though now we got to wait the rest of summer. But yeah, always love it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the draft's always a fun day. You know, just kind of instills hope into each franchise, and obviously it's fun to see, you know, which direction some teams are going in. But I will note too, my Patriots took Christian Gonzalez. Absolutely thrilled with the pick. A lot of mock drafts had him in the top 10, had him as the best corner. So love the pick. Obviously a big need for the New England Patriots team.
I got to ask you, as a Patriots guy,
yep,
if you see Bill go ahead and maybe trade up or grab Will Levis here, maybe they trade up for the next pick in the second round here. What would your reaction be if they grab Will Levis early second round? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but what would you think of that?
I don't love it, to be honest with you. You know, obviously we know that, you know, 2 years ago he had a great season. Last year, not a lot of talent around him. A new offensive coordinator, didn't have a great season. But I think that, you know, I don't think quarterback, I think you've got Zappe and Mac Jones, that those are two guys that, you know what, let's just see what we have here for this season. I don't want to waste that pick, especially too in the second round where you could get a very talented, whether it's a linebacker, you know, safety. I would like the offensive lineman. I would like, you know, a skilled set position, kind of stay away from the quarterbacks. But if Bill does end up going after Will Levis, I won't question it, because that is something that I've learned to do is, you know, really don't question Bill. But at times during the draft I have, and there's been a lot of busts, a lot of questionable picks from the Patriots in the draft, but I'll let him do his thing and we'll see what happens. But I don't think that they're going to trade up. They're more of a trade down, but we'll see what happens. Exciting. Obviously, we got day 2 today. We'll continue to check back in. And obviously, Will Levis, just finally, I mean, that sucks. Hey, you go there with your girlfriend, your parents are suited up, and you watch the entire first day not being picked. Would definitely let a fire under your butt, though.
Yeah, big time, big time. And you know what? I'll add this super quickly. I'll rile them off for any NFL degenerates out there. For initial reactions in terms of future stuff for what I expect next season, Chargers look like they could be going for the Super Bowl. Ravens are kind of back in that Super Bowl contention. Eagles, Vikings, Dallas, I could all see winning the NFC. And I think Josh Allen and Justin Herbert just got pushed to the top of the MVP chase for next year. But those are initial reactions. We'll see, and we'll have more, obviously, as the summer goes on. But those are quick reactions I see from those first round picks.
I love it. I love it. All right, folks, let's move into the stuff that's absolutely on the forefront of the sports right now. We're going to move into quarter 2 here with the NHL, and it's been just amazing right now. And I've got to hop right into it, because I've got to give Justin his flowers. Game 5, Justin said, listen, if there's a team out of all of these teams down 3-1, I think the Islanders could make a push. And guess what? They go on the road and get a much-needed win in Carolina in Game 5. They end up winning 3-2. With Taro Teravainen breaking his hand, he's now not available for the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, this team is so banged up. You got Sorokin, who looked phenomenal in Game 5. This guy starts to heat up. Now they're heading back to one of the most bananas arenas in the NHL in Long Island. I mean, is this team going to come back and get it done? We got a 3-2 series. They're in New York tonight. How you feeling about this one, Justin?
I have one thing that's obviously you don't want anyone to get hurt, but obviously they're major factors to talk about. So Taylor Vining, that's a big one. Their depth was already low with Svechnikov. We talked about Pacioretty. He wasn't even playing most of the season. But one big thing for this prediction I had Islanders win the series from the beginning. But from what I've seen in all these games, I said they could come back down 3-1. And this makes me even more excited about tonight's game. Is Antti Raanta hurt? Have you heard anything about Antti Raanta being hurt? Am I missing that? Because I'm seeing Freddie Anderson as the projected goalie tonight. A team that is up 3-1 in a series, 3-2 in a series, is having goalie concerns now and are second-guessing their decision on who they're starting. You would think that the Islanders are up 3-1 or 3-2 in this series with that decision-making. So, I mean, going back to the Island to tie up this series, and then you're winning back-to-back games going into Game 7, and they can't decide on their goaltending, man. It's strange to me that I feel like the Islanders are just like the favorite in this series, even though they're down 3-2. Like, yeah. I truly believe that they're more likely to win this series, and they still have to win 2 out of 3 games. But Sorokin, this is when goalies take over Game 6 and 7 of series, and Sorokin's that guy. So, again, I could be completely wrong. It takes crazy bounces. We've seen it already in this series, but I love this. I love this for the Islanders. I think tonight could be a blowout. I don't know. Maybe Freddie Anderson, this is what they needed, a guy like Freddie Anderson, experienced guy, to step in and be more of that calming presence, and he jumps over the opportunity. But I think the Islanders are kind of in the perfect position to kind of jump on Carolina tonight.
Yeah, I'm still a little hesitant on the Islanders in terms of the offensive production and their offense, generating offense, and you know, a guy like Bo Horvat, like, where you been, my man? Like, he needs to step up and be better. Obviously, Matt Barzal's starting to come on, but I need a little bit more offense. But I think from a content perspective and to continue to get series that we want to watch, I think the Islanders have to get through here, because I feel as if the Carolina Hurricanes find a way to win this game or find a way to move on, it's just not great for the content because they're so banged up. I just don't see this team going on a long run without two of their top three players up front. And, you know, obviously with the goaltending, you know, having some serious question marks around it, Raanta did not play well in Game 5.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but I've got that feeling as well. If the Islanders can kind of, you know, keep this jam going, keep moving and grooving, I mean, this team can find a way to win. That makes for an exciting, exciting opportunity for the New York Islanders.
And again, we talk about Sorokin and he's the hot hand, etc. Through the first 4 games this series, and it continued through Game 5 there when Islanders tied up, Islanders were the substantial expected goals for and 5-on-5 created chances leaders of this matchup. Like, it wasn't something where Sorokin standing on his head to give Islanders a chance. They're actually outplaying Carolina. It's just the bounces didn't go their way, and Carolina was opportunistic, which is a factor of the game of hockey, so I can't deny that for Carolina. But, like, this Islanders team has statistically been the better team through this series. It's just they went down 3-1. So maybe they're taking the ugly way around it to get the series win, but we'll see tonight. So, but, yeah, I agree. I think the Islanders team, just because of the health of Carolina, going to be more competitive moving forward against, say, a Devils or Rangers, but we'll get into. So
it's going to be interesting for sure. A big game tonight in Long Island. Let's move over to the Boston Bruins versus the Florida Panthers. So obviously we know I'm a Bruins fan, and obviously it was a bit of a roller coaster of a game. I felt like the Bruins completely dominated this game. Outshot the Florida Panthers 47-25. The Panthers also had 20 blocked shots in the game. I got to give the flowers to Taylor Hall. He's been phenomenal. You know, just finally kind of coming back from injuries, looks fantastic. What a roller coaster of a game this was. I mean, every time the Panthers would go up, it seems like seconds later, a few shifts later, the Bruins would go back and tie it up. It's a good thing I didn't, but I was willing to put a lot of money that the Bruins closed this series out at home. Obviously, the return of Patrice Bergeron, who scored a goal, looked great, was banging bodies. I was, you know, I'm always a little hesitant when a guy that's a little older comes back from injury and he's playing in that manner, but he looked good. Marchand has an opportunity at the end of the game to win a full-on, you never see a breakaway of that size. Like, from his own blue line, essentially, breakaway, then dying seconds, ends up shooting, can't get it past Sergei Bobrovsky, who had a fantastic game. And then in overtime, the Bruins, obviously dominating the game, goes down in their end. Allmark makes a bit of a blunder, puts the puck in the wrong corner. Matt Tkachuk, with the poise, brings it out front, backhands it in the net, celebrates like he had just won the cup. We're going back to Florida for Game 6. How are you feeling about this Bruins-Panthers series?
Yeah, just quickly on that Ullmark play, and this could be maybe a little bit maybe a little hardcore for me to bring this up, but I was watching the broadcast and they're talking about, I don't remember who's on the broadcast, but they're talking about how Florida Panthers forechecking the goalie as they're always taught to do, etc., when the goalie goes behind the net. Again, I don't, obviously system by system, but that's far from true, and that it wasn't really what's happened. So I don't know if there's anyone listening that maybe younger plays the game, whatever. That Florida, what happened there, he shut down in the corner. You don't go to Ullmark. Ullmark wants you to go to him and puts it by you. What he did was he came in so hot, Ullmark checked the spot. Then the Florida guy shut down. So Ullmark's play where he thought he was going to be able to get that guy to come to him, put it past him, right in the Florida guy's spot, wheelhouse, puck on net. You can't recover. Obviously, there's just a tough bounce. But it took a tough bounce like that to beat this Bruins team despite the leads that Florida had. Like, I had Bruins in six, and this is kind of what I expected. You know, like, Florida be able to come out, steal a game or two on the road. But this Boston team, with the experience they have and the talent they have, this is kind of what I expected to, you know what? Hey, we blew a game to clinch it. Second opportunity to end this series. They might bury them. Like, that's what this team is able to do, and that's the experience that they would have is, hey, that game's already out of our mind. We don't care. Hey, here's a 5-1 game next for Bruins. I could absolutely see that being the result. I'm not too worried. I'm not. You're a Bruins guy. Do you agree with that? Are you a little bit more worried? Do you have concern that this series isn't over?
No, I don't really. Personally, I don't, because just due to the fact too, like, they didn't have their stuff. It felt like at home, and they were kind of just letting the game come to them instead of, you know, really pouring it on. And, you know, every time it would be like, okay, we're in a hole, boom, right out of it. Boom, we're in a hole, right out of it. Boom, we're in a hole, right out of it. It just, they respond very well. And like you said, if they can kind of go into Florida, which they've already won two games in Florida, if they can kind of get on them early and then just play that defensive sound hockey and just, you know, get pucks deep and roll their lines, they're going to be just fine. I mean, obviously, if we look, they dominated that hockey game. There was not really that much Florida Panther pressure in a must-win game. So we'll see what happens here. Obviously, congrats to Florida for pushing it back to Florida for game six. But I fully expect the Bruins to come out flying. And I expect, obviously, too, I love the fact that, Jimmy Montgomery, he's playing around with his forwards. He's showing us that perfection line at times, which I can love. But he's got so many weapons up front who are very comfortable playing with each other. It's going to be an exciting one tonight. I'm thrilled for it. And I will be in the Chalkboard app for all night long. So let's move into the next series here. The Maple Leafs versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, Toronto up 3-1, going home. And it's noisy in Canada right now. People are excited. People are talking about how different it feels. We talked about it last episode, Justin, how we felt like this Maple Leafs team was feeling a little bit different, feeling like this could be the year. But this is a great opportunity for them to host Game 5 at home, taking on a team that you got Derek Lalonde, former assistant coach, in the media talking about Vasilevskiy's weaknesses. Just you have them on the ropes. Can you put them away? You've been to this 3-win marker in the past. Can you get over the hump? And they can't get it done at home. Tampa Bay rolls in, gets game, makes it a 3-2 series. It's heading back to Tampa. Is there a little worry right now in Toronto? You'd have to think you're probably feeling a little uneasy heading back to Tampa Bay right now.
Greg, is there a little worry in Toronto?
There's
a lot of worry going on in Toronto and anyone else who's on the side of the Leafs. I had Leafs in 5. You had Leafs in 6. I can't even say that you're primed to be hitting on this Leafs in 6 prediction, even though they're going into game 6 up 3-2. Like, that's how crazy this is for this Leafs team. And me and you were both against that theory. We were ready to just drop that narrative and say they've had the experience. They're older. They have the veterans in there. They're kind of grittier. They're better with the goaltending. That shouldn't be an issue. And I don't want to drop back into that narrative like it's the Leafs. I'm really trying to get that out of my head right now and not dive into that. The things that I could say is this. We just said it about Boston. Same spot. They lost their game 5 to clinch a series. We have all the confidence in the world in them to close it out. We don't have that in the Leafs, and I'm not going to act like I do, but we talked about it in the series. They have Ryan O'Reilly. Those players on the Leafs themselves have been in this situation a million times. I still do think this is a different team. I hate that it's going back to Tampa, and I honestly hate that that coach brought up stuff about Vasilevsky, because you know John Cooper is running that back to Vasi and putting it on the board in front of his stall saying, this is what they're saying about you in the media. You're about to lose to Toronto, and he goes out and shuts him down for two goals against. But Leafs had that game 3-2 again, and they had opportunities there to potentially put one in the last minute with the empty net. Like, it would be one thing for me if Tampa won this game 6-1 or 7-3 like they did game one and really just cranked the Leafs. But I'm going to stick to my guns and say, you know what? They're not immature. They know what they're doing. They are going to be able to regroup all that veteran leadership in that room and say to themselves, you know what? Hey, we're the better team. We've shown it. We've beat them three times. Somehow, are we really talking about a Leafs series where they win three games in Tampa? I don't know. But I'm not ready to quit on the Leafs yet. I'm not. Are you the same way, or are you thinking Tampa could win this series?
I do think that Tampa could win. I'm still on the Leafs, and I still think that the Leafs are going to win because, you know, for a variety of factors. I mean, Vasilevsky, this is the one guy that we have to watch. I mean, obviously, somebody put something in front of his face because he played phenomenally last night. And honestly, too, like, if he gets hot, that's worrisome for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But a guy like Victor Hedman, he's playing banged up. I mean, he got hit into the boards, and he went off. I'm not sure if you saw this clip. But he went right off the ice, his lower back, and he grabbed the trainer and was like, the trainer shoved his hand right down his pants and was working on something right away. So that's never good if your best defenseman's dealing with something. But, I mean, you never really know. It's as long as you let them hang around, this is the team that's been to three straight finals. I mean, they were down 3-1 last year against the Rangers. This is a team that can come back. We've seen it. And we've seen the Leafs not been able to win that fourth game. So, to me, right now... losing that game is very worrisome. That was your opportunity to bury them. That was your opportunity to get rid of the ghosts. Now there's the question marks. Now the pressure's mounted. As we continue on in this series, as the periods go on and you're not closing out that series, that pressure is just absolutely forming.
A quick pivot here, a little hypothetical I want to ask you.
Yep.
If Leafs lose this series, okay, they just blew a 3-1 lead again and they lose this series. This ain't happening. I don't think it's happening. But they just blew a seven-game series. They fire management. They fire Dubas there. They fire Keefe. They're trying to make a splash. And this was a hypothetical conversation I had. If Arizona Coyotes came to Toronto and said, hey, we want our hometown guy in this mullet barn with a new arena coming, we'll give you the first overall pick, say they get, for Austin Matthews. If you're the Leafs, are you saying goodbye to Matthews and taking Bedard? And if you're Arizona, are you taking Matthews, the proven commodity, the proven goal scorer, to get away from the risk of Bedard and the hometown here? Like, again, super hypothetical. Where do you stand? What side would you rather have? Bedard on this Leafs team, Matthews on Arizona, or everyone stays put where they are right now?
I'm shipping Matthews down to Arizona, man, and I'm taking Connor Bedard, like, guaranteed. I mean, obviously, if they don't get this done in this series, this group just can't get it done. This group needs change. I mean, it's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And if you run it back again, like Kyle Dubas did this year, you're absolutely crazy. What's the definition of insanity? It's doing something the same way and expecting different results. You have to change this group up, but let's not jump too far ahead. They've got two more games to try to close it out. So that's going to be exciting. But a team that is definitely worried right now are the New York Rangers, who ended up starting this series, going on the road into New Jersey, winning two games. And I came out and apologized. I came out and said I was worried about my pick. I'd like to Conor McGregor right now and go, I'd like to apologize to absolutely nobody. The New Jersey Devils have come out and responded in the exact manner I thought. They're a speedy team. They play with such pace. And the New York Rangers, quite frankly, have looked old. They've looked slow. They're not getting production from a lot of their guys. And the Devils have responded in such a massive way, rolling in MSG and grabbing two and then completely shutting down the New York Rangers at home, winning 4-0. And you talked about it. You take the floor. How good has Schneid been?
Well, I'll say this first. It's my turn to apologize. I was on Rangers. I was talking about the lack of experience with the Devils. I was saying they don't have the goalie matchup for the Rangers. And I was the one who was wrong. And we were, like you said, I was basking in the glory of Rangers going up 2-0, making it look easy in New Jersey. I said this is over and Devils will not win an MSG. But as you mentioned, and we talked about it last pod, This was before they showed they're willing to play Schmid. And this guy is going to prove this pod right on how for real he is. I'm going to make this pick right now. And I know I'm pivoting. I had Rangers, whatever. We've seen what we've seen so far. If the New Jersey Devils, if and when the New Jersey Devils beat the Rangers, they will beat the winner of Carolina and the Islanders, and they will be sitting in the conference finals. And I'll tell you who this Devils team reminds me of. The New York Rangers with Shesterkin, and when they were a little bit less experienced and younger, when they went on deep playoff runs and surprised people. Even reminiscent of the team last year with the Rangers, who people weren't saying were the juggernaut of the East. People were kind of buying in on them early, and they went on a run and proved us, hey, top goaltending, even though they're young, could be successful. Rangers are in the worst spot you could be in terms of confidence. When you can't score on a goalie and you don't believe you could score on a goalie and you've lost three games, I can't see a scenario right now. Rangers win this series. I don't even want to say this because I don't want this to happen. But again, I'm only saying it because it happens so much in the playoffs. The only way they do is if Schmid gets hurt. And that's the last thing I want to see. But that's the only hope they have. Because they can't score on them. And this Devils team is so good in front of them. This is a Devils series. Schmid will carry this team deeper in the playoffs than most people might think if they don't know about Schmid.
The Rangers, they just look like they're a half a step behind. Like, it just looks like this Devils team is just pouring it on at times. And we've seen this throughout the season. This is why I was on the Devils pre-series was they play with such pace and they're so offensive. And you've got to be able to keep up with them. And if you can't keep up with them offensive because you've got this stone cold lunatic in Schmid in the net, how are you going to win? It's going to be interesting to see. I'm excited for game six, which will be in MSG, which the Devils have won both games there. So that's going to be exciting. I'm not going to write off any team, but it does seem like the Devils are going to take this one. Let's move in out west. The Minnesota Wild versus the Dallas Stars. This one has been an absolute bloodbath. Maybe the most physical series going right now. I mean, it's just they're playing for keeps in this one, as they like to say. But in game five, Marcus Foligno gets kicked out early. He takes out Radek Faska with a bit of a knee. Ottinger is starting to heat up, which is worrisome for the Western Conference because this guy's an absolute dog in between the pipes. They end up winning 4-0. What do you think about the Marcus Foligno hit, and how are you feeling about the Minnesota Wild's chances of coming back and winning the series?
Yeah, Marcus Foligno is one of those players that plays on the edge, and he's been a guy that is obviously their enforcer in a way. He plays a power forward style, but this isn't surprising for me from him. The knee on knees and stuff we've seen before are so ugly because they're just so at the high pace game we play in. I would say those are one of the worst hits to take. Like hitting from behind and headshots get all the attention, and they rightfully should. It causes so many injuries. But as a player, you get scared of these knee on knees because when you hurt your knee, man, the recovery from those are insane and they're just so unpredictable. So Marcus Foligno's had all kinds of hits like that. Nothing really new here. Playoff hockey, whatever. Like, you like those tough guys if he's on your team, but you don't want to see injuries, man. But like you said, like, there's been blood. This series has been a war. And we kind of said that from the beginning with how these two teams are. Excuse me. And I don't know. I think, like, you already kind of mentioned it. Like, Ottinger heating up, I think, is the difference for me. And I think Dallas wins the series. We've seen, 3-2. Like, this is nothing crazy for the Wild to be, like, overcome. But I think Ottinger is a big part of that team where we kind of had Gustafson as that X factor for the Wild. And if Ottinger's playing just as hot and just as well, I'm going to take the experience with the Dallas Stars. And this Dallas team's way more experienced than most people might give him credit for. So I think they're able to close this one out. And I'm not too worried about it. I mean, again, Minnesota came out hot in the series, but it's kind of been Dallas the rest of the way as of late, so.
Listen to this. So the Dallas Stars, obviously Tyler Seguin's got 4 goals. Fantastic. But the Dallas Stars, I think it was 2018, they had 3 top 40 picks. And guess who those picks were? Heiskanen, Jason Robertson, and Ottinger.
Yeah.
What a draft.
Holy man.
What a draft.
Scout a raise, man. Get that scouting crew a raise.
100%. Oh. Just phenomenal. It just sets your team up for a decade plus, yeah. You know, drafting that that strongly. And obviously, it takes a bit of luck, but just phenomenal. Moving into the Edmonton and LA series, a huge game five, you know, at home, tied 2-2. They had the huge comeback in game four, and they just, you know, they lit it up. 6-3 win. Obviously, they ruled Corpusello out of the net. They went back. Obviously, we had Jack Campbell come in game four after a slow start to Stuart Skinner. They went back to Stuart Skinner. Obviously, I don't think the series is over yet. They got to go win LA and prove it. But, you know, now that they've got the depth moving and grooving in Edmonton with goals from Bjorkstrand or is it Bjorkstrand? I think it is. Maybe not Bjorkstrand. Anyway, the depth is coming alive there. Yeah. You know, you got Evander Kane sniping, and he's playing injured. But, you know, McDavid really hasn't had his pop-off game yet, which is scary for LA. But I think Edmonton gets this done in LA and gets this done in six. But how are you feeling about this one?
Yeah, I don't know. Are you talking about Bjugstad, maybe?
Bjugstad is who I'm... Yeah.
But, yeah. This is massive game coming up. I mean, I think Edmonton in six is not very telling of how this series has kind of looked. This Kings team has been extremely competitive. I've had this debate with a roommate of mine. He's a goalie, and I play obviously forward, so maybe two different perspectives. But who does this 3-day rest help the most? Because obviously Clippers and Lakers were in the playoffs, so they had a kind of wonky scheduling with getting that LA arena, and the Kings are sitting here with 3 days rest. Kings and Edmonton. The argument, we're two sides. You got, I was on the side of the Edmonton. You give McDavid, Drysdale, and this Edmonton team that's able to hem LA in the zone for so long, 3 days of rest to be able to jump on them next game and kind of get that blowout win out of their mind, and they just kind of get re-hungry again and that feeling to close out a series. Or do you give the Kings, who Corpusello played half a game now, so he's kind of on an asterisk 4 or 5 day rest, and a team that's been chasing McDavid and Drouin around the ice rest to defend harder and be able to lock it down. Who does this 3 day rest give more advantage to? Because we don't see these in any other series except this one, obviously. And would you lean in either side more than the other for who this might help more?
This is going to be an interesting take probably, but yeah, I lean Edmonton in this one. And we've seen just a lot of teams play really well on the road. And I'm not sure if this has anything to do with anything, but we look back and these teams heading home, they kind of fall into that everyday routine. They've got their wives, their dogs, their children, you know, just kind of things to distract them from hockey. And they kind of fall into that everyday routine. Well, if you're going in the road and you're on the hotel with all the boys, it's kind of still in your forefront. It's like, boy, you know, you're bonding, you're keeping it, you know, at the forefront of things. Whereas if you're at home, you might get a little relaxed. And I'm not sure if that has anything to do with anything, but we've seen teams on the road play very well. And I'm sure that, you know, being with the boys and resting and kind of being isolated in that Stanley Cup mindset, it may help. And I mean, I think that, McDavid, it looked like his leg was, he's dealing with something with his leg. And I know Evander Kane's dealing with both an upper body and lower body. I mean, I'm going to lean the Edmonton Oilers. I think they're the better hockey team. And I do think that this rest will help them, but certainly Saturday night's going to be just a must-watch game. I'm super excited for it, but I'm feeling Edmonton in six. I think they close this out in LA.
Yeah, you know what? I actually like that take. I didn't think of that myself. Obviously, in college hockey here, we play, you play every weekend. You play Friday, Saturday. And the big thing that you learn here is how to win on the road, how to win at home, and the big differences. And like you said, when you're on the road, it's a business trip. Like, you're not going there for any other reason except hockey. So everything you do, meals, hanging out with the guys, hotel, pregame skate, etc., like, it's all about why you're there is hockey. Like, that can't leave your mind. When you're at home, you're right. You got the kids, when waking up early, going to bed if they're younger for some of these guys. You got the wife. What are we doing for dinner? Are we going out for dinner? Are we meeting up with friends that aren't on the team? Like, all those things are different factors that absolutely play into this. And I don't hate that. And you know what? McDavid and Drysdale talk about business trip. These guys know what they're in this playoff run to do. And they're going to LA and they're going to be absolutely dialed in. And you're absolutely right. I think I actually, you put me on Edmonton a little, I was already on Edmonton, but I actually like Edmonton a little bit more even now to close this game out in six here.
Yeah. And for Edmonton too, like this team, like LA, they got exited in the first round. This team went to the conference finals. It's Stanley Cup or bust for this team.
Like you said, I think this LA Kings team are top three in this Western Conference. like when I look around the rest of the Western Conference, I'm seeing maybe the Avs potential, which they might not even get out of round one. We'll talk about, but Avs potential with their stars, maybe Dallas with their experience and Ottinger if he gets going, maybe Vegas. But if their goalie situation, like this LA Kings Edmonton matchup, like this LA Kings Edmonton matchup is as much as round one. I think people might forget as this playoffs go on, like, this could have been a conference final if the playoffs were scheduled differently or what have you. But anyway, and I want to touch on it super quick. I said on the last pod, we were talking about it. I said they have to go back to Stuart Skinner, and they did, and they gave him that confidence. Hey, we're going to turn back to you. And that looked like it was the right move. So, yeah, we'll see going forward. Sorry, but I completely agree with that in terms of how competitive it's been and what they got moving forward, maybe going to the cup final.
I think it's just better for content for us as well if we can get the Oilers through. But
well, you got a little action, eh? We got to keep that running.
Exactly.
We're open for that still.
100%. Moving into Colorado, this has obviously been very shocking. It's given us a little bit of Vegas vibes. Obviously, it's their second season in the NHL. But the Seattle Kraken, I mean, this team they are built deep. And not too many names that jump off the page as superstars, but they're a four-line unit, and they've got some big, mean defensemen, and they've got a goaltender who's playing very well. And the Colorado Avalanche are a little lost here. Nathan MacKinnon, smashing his stick on the ice after a non-call. They go down and bury a puck. Colorado's in trouble right now. They're not getting a lot from their depth. It's really been, if Nathan MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Cale Makar playing well, they're getting the results. But obviously with Makar suspended and MacKinnon and Rantanen not having a great game, I mean, we're looking at Seattle up 3-2, heading home. Unbelievable, man. And interesting story here. We can talk about this just briefly, but Valeri Nichushkin, obviously, he had a phenomenal playoff last year. He's a big part of that team. He's taken a personal leave, and some news came out yesterday, that some very odd news that when they flew into Seattle, obviously, they were at the Four Seasons Seattle, and he had a 28-year-old Russian woman in his hotel room that was very intoxicated. The team doctors came in. They sent her to the hospital. There was some news surrounding that she had lost her passport. She was dealing with some very sketchy, we'll say, people. Valerie hasn't played since this whole thing went down. I haven't heard much about this. Obviously, there's a lot of skepticism around what's going on, but that loss of Valerie Nichushkin has been huge, and Colorado finds himself down 3-2 on the road in Seattle. Not looking good right now for the Colorado Avalanche.
No, I mean, obviously that Nichushkin situation, don't know all the details, crazy stuff going on there, but this, in terms of on the ice for Nichushkin, he brings a lot more to this lineup than people think, and he actually is a big X factor in terms of playing with MacKinnon, because he makes MacKinnon's life a lot easier when he's playing on that line. It's tough. You're missing Landeskog. Now you're losing Nichushkin. Makar was suspended, and he's already been handling injuries and stuff. Again, I don't want to be someone who just keeps picking the team that's up 3-2 to close out this series, but like, it's a 5-game sample. Like, it's not a small sample size that we're working with here. Like, if any team in this West, I'm looking at Dallas, Minnesota, Edmonton, LA, Colorado, Seattle, I could see winning this series, it would be Avalanche, with Makar maybe coming back for a little redemption run here after suspension. But man, the Seattle team's so deep, and their experience, that's the thing. You can't even use the argument of like, maybe they haven't been here, done that, because I know they're a new franchise, but all their players have been here. Like, man, I think Seattle might shock the world. I think that's what's going to happen here.
And they've gelled together so much. They talk about the chemistry of that team. And obviously, there's a little bit of a fire. There's a little bit of a disrespect thing when you get put up for expansion and you get picked. Yeah. And you're kind of like, you know what? F it. Like, let's just go and let's bond as a bunch of guys. We're a bunch of outcasts, and they play hard, man. And they bring it every night. And you have to question their work ethic or what brand of hockey they're bringing. It's very consistent, and they're going to skate you into the dirt. So it's exciting right now for Seattle Kraken fans. And obviously they've got Colorado on the ropes, so that'll be interesting. And just finally here, we don't have to talk too much about it. It's pretty much the story about the Winnipeg Jets getting injured. Not having Nikolaj Ehlers for a lot of the series, losing Josh Morrissey, I think, was kind of the nail in the coffin and the Golden Knights' role. I mean, I'm not sure what to think about the Golden Knights. Obviously, the Winnipeg Jets were pretty bad in the second half of the season. And then you take a lot of their roster out with injury. Obviously, the Knights took advantage of that. We'll see what happens there in that series. But yeah, I mean, it's Vegas is moving on, and Winnipeg obviously was a lot of what ifs around that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, this has been injuries. You already mentioned it. Like, when Vegas scored that first goal, honestly, the NFL draft became more interesting than watching the rest of this hockey game. Vegas is the better team. If they had their goalie, like you already brought up with Brossoit being the starter, if they had Thompson, I think this is a sweep. I think this isn't a close series. We'll see what the Jets do. That's a conversation for the summer for us to talk about more, because they got old guys on that roster and some contracts to figure out that haven't been able to succeed or get it done. So, we'll have to see. But I don't know much else. Vegas wins, and honestly, it didn't look too much. Mark Stone, we talked about last time, but Mark Stone again, 3 points.
Big addition.
This guy's unbelievable. So, but not much else there. The better team wins.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to conclude the segment of quarter two with the NHL, but let's move into the halftime show here quickly, Justin. So for the halftime show, we go, what team are they on? Where are they now? And I've got some greasy names for you. I'm going to be completely honest, but what I'm going to do, Justin, is I'll give you the sport of the player, because some of the names you may not be familiar with. I think most of them you will be, but we'll start things off with NHL player Ben Hutton.
Ben Hutton. That sounds like a guy who might be in Philadelphia?
Vegas.
Oh, he is in Vegas.
He's bounced around a bit, though. NBA player Mike Muscala.
Oh my God. Celtics?
Boom! There it is. NBA player Lamar Stevens.
Oh my gosh, I have absolutely no idea. I'm going to go with OKC.
The Cavs. played like 5 minutes in the Cavs loss. MLB player Eric Hosmer.
Hosmer was with the... I can't remember if he moved. I'm going to say Cubs.
He's with the Cubs. Boom, he's with the Cubs.
Huge.
That's okay, a big
okay,
one.
Okay.
And then finally, NHL player Jacob Loco.
Jacob Loco, Coyotes.
The Bruins.
Oh, wow.
He's been playing fourth line for the Bruins, yeah. Played the last two games. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Yep.
I should have hit that one.
You got any for me or what?
Yeah, I got. How many you want? Did you just do five? Let's do five.
Yeah.
You got five here, ready?
Yep.
All right.
Cody Zeller. The Hornets?
No, Miami Heat.
Wow.
Okay. Kiefer Bellows.
Where's Bellows? The Dodgers?
No, Philadelphia Flyers.
Is there a Kiefer or a Bellows on the...
for helping you out, I'm going to say, yeah, I think there is.
That's a whiff.
All right.
Mecole Hardman, wow. The Jets?
Yes, he did go to the Jets. That's right. All right. I'm not sure how much you followed. CFL superstar this year, Nathan Rourke.
He's with the Colts now?
Jaguars.
The Jags, no.
Jags. And I got one more here for you. Teoscar Hernandez, Blue Jay.
Teoscar Hernandez. Simeon went to the Rangers. Teoscar went to the Mariners?
Yes.
Let's go.
Right on.
Nice.
That's a good hit.
All right, we'll take it. That's a little halftime show for you. Where are they now? Some top names there. Obviously, Kiefer Bellows, I apologize. I don't know why I thought he was a Los Angeles Dodger, but maybe we'll cut that. No. All right, let's move into quarter three here. We got some NBA series to talk about. Celtics get it done last night. Obviously, Atlanta hung around, man. They made it tough with a big win in Boston in game five, but the Celtics get it done in game six. Obviously, moving on, and now we've got a heck of a series. We'll preview it on Monday, but the 76ers Celtics will certainly be a must-watch series. Any notes from the Boston-Atlanta Hawks series?
Yeah, I mean, this was something that honestly was surprising to me, because the Celtics came out so hot in this series. It looked like it'll be done quick. And then Atlanta not only won a game or two, but they made that last clinching game for the Celtics a lot harder than the Celtics wanted it to be. So I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean anything too much. I can't feel as comfortable as maybe I would have if they swept them. I mean, that was kind of the expectation for me with how high the Celtics expectations were. But I said at the beginning of this playoffs, I made my predictions on this NBA playoffs. I don't love the 76ers as much as other people do. Despite their record against the the Celtics as much as people do, despite their record against the 76ers here in the regular season. Obviously, they took care of them pretty good in the regular season, but the 76ers team, a lot more rest coming into round two. The Celtics team got pushed by Atlanta. And there's an aspect when you lose two games, almost lose a third. 76ers got a lot of videos on what Atlanta was able to do that caused Celtics problems. Again, I'd like the 76ers to give Celtics a run and possibly win this series, because, again, I wasn't high on the Celtics, and they didn't prove me wrong in round one. I know they got it done. You're a Boston fan, man. Like, what did you see from the Celtics team, and what did you think of it ending your game six and the way it went down?
Yeah, I mean, I think Atlanta is just, they're a decent team. I mean, Trae Young played, you know, very well, and joined to Murray, and they just have a decent roster, and I think they just played them tough, and I think that Boston's going to be just fine. I mean, I think that they are poised to have a great series with the 76ers. Obviously, they rolled, with a big sweep, but I think I like having a little bit of adversity, you know, playing in tough basketball games before, you know, walking into round two instead of, you know, just beating the wheels off a team and just kind of waiting for what's next. So I like what I've seen from Jaylen Brown, obviously wearing the mask right now. He's played phenomenally. I think Jason Tatum's got a bit more in the tank. And then obviously, hopefully their defense can figure it out, because defensively this team, you know, can lock it down and you know, have a lot of great pieces, obviously with the defensive player of the year in Marcus Smart. And obviously we talked about how underrated Robert Williams goes at times. But they've got a lot of veteran presence on this team as well. And I do like what I've seen, and I'm excited for round two. But the biggest surprise of the NBA playoffs, clearly we've got probably a little bit to talk about here, was the Milwaukee Bucks losing 4-1 to the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler, are you kidding me? Jimmy Butler, a huge game four and game five, 56 in game four, 42 in game five, forcing overtime in game five. Just a massive, monumental performance from Jimmy Butler, and the Heat move on. Unbelievable. Unbelievable series, and shocking. The number one seed, obviously without Giannis for two games, but Milwaukee, you'd have to think you've got to be better to win that series. And we'll talk about, Jimmy, we'll talk about Giannis' comments, but were you surprised as I was that Miami walked through Milwaukee?
Shocked it got done this quick. Shocked that it kind of happened the way it did with Jimmy Butler absolutely taking over. Not sure if you've seen it or heard of it as much as I have. It's kind of everywhere now on the social medias, but the Jimmy Butler, Michael Jordan possible relationship and the whole Jimmy Butler's upbringing and the time at birth in Chicago and not knowing his dad and stuff. This series kind of helped that argument and that kind of conspiracy theory quite a bit with how nuclear he went. Like, there, I saw a lot of talks about this being possibly top two playoff performance ever. Where, like, the Heat have this pedigree themselves and have experience and et cetera. But we're still talking about the number one seed in the East, but Milwaukee Bucks. Like, this is something that kind of almost seems like this was a 4-5 matchup in the way that these two teams looked, and Jimmy and how hard he played and how well he played. This Heat team, I don't know. This is my concern. I got to ask you, we see Knicks versus Heat here. Can Jimmy do this for 5, 6, 7 more games? Like, is this sustainable?
Absolutely. I think this is a great matchup, and I don't think that this Knicks team should be overly confident or overly favored. I mean, we just watched Miami just take down the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, I'm excited for that series. With Jimmy playing this well, I mean, I don't know which way I'm going to lean. We'll get into it. We'll preview it on Monday. Yeah. But I do want to talk about Giannis's comments, because Giannis came out, he kind of gave a heartfelt speech of, you know, we learn from this, and it's, you know, it's not the end of the world, and it's not, you know, a huge failure. News alert, this is a massive failure. You've won an NBA championship. You've learned how to win an NBA championship. You are in your prime. You are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. To call this not a failure is just, it's beating around the bush. I'm sorry, Giannis. I get that it's a heartfelt moment, and you want to be very genuine, and you kind of want to take the heat off you. Dude, this is a huge failure for the Bucks. And, you know, I'm not sure if you're going to be the number one seed, but this is an opportunity for your team to go on a run and win another ring to cement your legacy as, you know, one of the greats of all time, and you lose in the first round. I'm sorry, Giannis, I can't buy into that. You know, we'll learn from this. You've already won a championship. You know what it takes, and you fell short. It's a big failure, in my opinion.
I mean, again, let's relate this to the NHL playoffs that are going on right now. And what if Austin Matthews came out after they lost, say, this round against Tampa 4-1, and he came out and said, "This isn't a failure. We'll learn from this." Is Giannis kind of getting away with this in ways that other athletes wouldn't because they've won recently? Like, I think they are. I think he is, absolutely, because I think people are going to say, you know what, Giannis has always been this kind of calm-mannered guy. He's the leader of this team. He's kind of saying, you know what, these happen, but he's proven he could win, so what are we to judge him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's proven he could win, but, man, like, these aren't necessarily comments fan bases want to hear. I know some people might, but this is very much a, I don't want to say deflecting, because I like Giannis. I think he is a well-mannered guy. I do think there's something to be said about the poise, but you're absolutely right. Like, I got to think maybe the injury he had was more than we thought. So maybe they're kind of saying, like, you know what, like, Giannis gave us everything he could, and we didn't even know if he could play in terms of, like, management and the coaching staff and stuff. But you just lost 4-1 to the only other 8 seed to ever beat a 1 seed.
It's tough, man. It's tough. And I mean, I'm not buying it, but I think it's just a huge failure for Milwaukee Bucks and Milwaukee Bucks fans. Just finally in the Eastern Conference, obviously the Knicks end up winning in 5 games. Kudos to you. You had the Knicks winning. I'm not sure if we had 6 or 7, but I was on the Cavs. You were on the Knicks. The Cavs, to me, just the superstars were just very disappointing. I mean, Donovan Mitchell didn't get things going. Darius Garland was just disappointing at times. And Evan Mobley, near invisible at times, I found, just didn't step up to the plate. And the Knicks, I feel, the Knicks' depth, they played much better. Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, they were getting it from all over. You had good games from Canadian boy. His name has escaped me. You know what? It's been just fantastic for the Knicks. And obviously that fan base is thrilled. And they'll go on and take on the Miami Heat. And, I mean, they get it done quickly, man.
Yeah. RJ Barrett Thank had a you. Great series there. again, the young guy needed to prove himself with that Knicks fan base, because they were calling for his head earlier in his career here, in the short career. I'll take the notch that I got this Knicks pick right, but I had 7 games. Like, I mean, yeah, I had the Knicks, but I can't even act as if I thought this was going to be done in this fashion.
Yep.
And again, we're going to talk about Heat and Knicks later, but is this the Knicks? Or is this the lack of delivery from the Cavs superstars?
Yeah,
I think you hit it on the head, man. I think this Cavs team is still young. I think they're one of the youngest in the league with OKC. So watch out for them moving forward, learning from this, having this. You got to lose to win, and maybe this was their lose to win, because Randle didn't show up every single night. He's still a big piece for them, he's a very good player, but. Yeah, this Cavs, disappointing from the Cavs. Like, that's nowhere around it. Like, yeah, we'll see. Probably good for the NBA and their marketing and media work for Knicks to move on. It's always good when a New York team moves on over a Cleveland team, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. just finally in the Western Conference. I mean, we talked about it. It was just a formality with Minnesota pushing this to Game 5. The Nuggets win. They take care of business. The owner's happy because they got another game at home in the first round, selling popcorn and beers and things of that nature. So obviously the Nuggets move on. Golden State's the big one here in this next series. Yep. So obviously the big question marks, they tied it up at home. Could they get a win on the road? And yes, they could. Steph Curry with 31. In my opinion, I looked at the statistics, didn't watch much of the game, but I think Golden State can be much better. They can be much stronger. They didn't have huge performances from their entire roster. So I think, you know, if this team, you know, can kind of have a strong game here at home, they're going to close out Sacramento, and that kind of Cinderella-esque Sacramento up 2-0 at home, that whole story goes to a fold. I think Golden State takes care of their series at home tonight. But how are you feeling about this one?
I completely agree. I mean, that was the big thing me and you both talked about, was winning on the road, and they did it. So, I mean, I think that answered both of our major question. I didn't think they were going to do it. And maybe the only thing I'll say in terms of me being wrong is that De'Aaron Fox injury. I think he broke a finger.
Very true.
Or something, right? And I mean, he was the one that was dominating them.
Carrying.
All season long and in this playoff. So you wonder if that was a factor for sure. But we'll see. Golden State, man, they win this next game and close out this series, which I think they'll do at home. I think that's kind of what you're hinting at as well. Again, we'll get into predictions later on, but when they get past round one, this is not much left in the West in their way. And they got the experience and the pedigree. So I think they get it done, though, in terms of this series, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously excited for Golden State fans who had a brutal regular season, and obviously being down 2-0, you're very worried about the status of the Golden State Warriors, but they're feeling pretty good. Moving into the Lakers-Memphis Grizzlies. Man, the Lakers have a great opportunity, up 3-1, to close it out. Cannot close it out. The Memphis Grizzlies take Game 5. They've got Game 6 in L.A. tonight. LeBron really struggled there. So how you feeling about the Lakers? Can they get this done at home, or is this going 7 games back to Memphis?
Yeah, this is a tough one because you get the production of Anthony Davis last game. I think he had like 31 and 16, I want to say, but then you only got 15 from LeBron.
Yeah, shot 1 of 9 from 3.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of a situation where this game was so tight until that Memphis run of I think they went on a 19-2 run to just end the game, basically. I know it was early in the game, but like that was the run that kind of buried them. And yeah, you just, again, it's LeBron James. You're not going to sit here and say that you can't trust him and stuff, but you get 31 from Anthony Davis, man. If you could put up 25 and get maybe a few more from Schroeder, etc., yeah, you're winning a series. But we talk about with the Bruins. We'll say it again here. Grizzlies, Lakers. Lakers up 3-2. They just lose the game-clinching game. That's an experience where you like to think that they could say to themselves, hey, we let one go. Got that elimination game nerves out. We come back for game 6. Let's put the nail in the coffin, like we've all been here, done that, and bury this team. But this Grizzlies team's a tough out, for sure. Tough out. And you know what? Dylan Brooks has been awfully quiet since the last few games. So I almost wonder, do they have their ducks in a row and kind of leveled their heads a little bit? But we'll see. I'm going to stick with the Lakers. But again, we've talked about in the other rounds, if there's a 3-2 series left in the NBA, I'm going to say Grizzlies are a team that can maybe overcome that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping the Lakers win. I expect a massive game from LeBron James. I really do. He told the media that he played like quote-unquote shit last game. So I expect LeBron to have a big bounce-back game. And just finally, the Clippers, I mean, when you lose Paul George, you lose Kawhi Leonard, he tore his meniscus in his knee. I mean, the Suns walked through them. Obviously, you lose your two biggest superstars in the NBA. You're really not going to be competitive in the playoffs. It's interesting with Kawhi. I mean, obviously, the Suns move on, which we both expected them to. I think we both picked the Suns. The Clippers, I mean, is Kawhi Leonard, is he done? Like, he's playing like 30 games every regular season. I mean, he is the definition of load management. Is this a team that has to move on from a guy like Kawhi? I actually do think he's got one more year left on his deal, but I mean, it's very tough for an owner like Steve Ballmer, who's really put a lot, invested a lot into these, you know, kind of this big three. And right now times are dark in Clipperland.
And it's really tough because you're in a situation where they have a new arena and the Lakers are getting a little bit old. So it's almost like you kind of thought for Ballmer, hey, if I go get Kawhi and Paul George and invest, I mean, everyone makes this mistake when asking how long LeBron's going to be LeBron for. Obviously, that's not looking like it's going to end soon, but there was looking like there could be an opportunity for Clippers to kind of get some more real estate in that Los Angeles market. And it kind of went the complete opposite. LeBron's breaking records. LeBron's making playoff series wins. And the Clippers are going downhill with injuries. And you hate to see that. Like, that's no lack of judgment or whatever. Like, you can't predict injuries. I know Kawhi's had them in the past, but you got it. Like, we've seen other guys overcome them after having injury-riddled careers. But, like, I don't know if they're in a spot to just tank, man. Like, it's such a tough spot if they go and tank right now. Just competing with LeBron being in LA and the new stadium and everything. So, I don't know. Moving, and who's going to take Kawhi? I mean, at NBA, everyone is willing to trade anything, but who's going to take Kawhi right now? Paul George, I could see, but he's a great asset to have when he's healthy. So, they're in it's a tough time to be a Clippers fan, to say the least. A
lot of question marks there in Clipperland, but like we'll watch the conclusion of round one closely, and like I said on Monday, we will have some serious predictions as these things close out. Moving into quarter four, just quickly here, Justin, let's talk a bit about the MLB and the PGA Tour. We'll keep it quick. I'll be completely honest. my MLB consumption has been limited. I mean, with everything going on in the NBA and NHL, just kind of checking in, checking box scores, you know, kind of reading headlines. But the AL East is just jumping off the page in regard to how competitive and how difficult it's going to be to get into the playoffs out of this division. I mean, you've got five teams are competitive. Obviously, we do expect the Red Sox to fall off. But I mean, with this Tampa Bay Rays team setting records and just on the tear that they're on and having the Baltimore Orioles hanging around and on a great start, I mean, the Jays and Yankees right now, who were expected to be the top teams in this division, they've got to play a little catch up early on in this season.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And again, it's just your comment on how much you've watched. I'm the same way. I mean, I get big time into the MLB when NHL and NBA playoffs end, which luckily I'm still able to have 120 games of MLB action when that time hits anyway.
Very true.
So it works out pretty well. But you're absolutely right. This AL East, man, and we kind of knew this was coming in, but to say it was going to be the Orioles sitting in two and the Yankees in the second last spot, I will say I don't think the Red Sox are showing anything that's not consistent of what they're going to be, to be quite honest with you. But I would like to think that the Orioles and Yankees are due to have opposite progression, whatever. Like, I don't see the Yankees being the fourth place team in this division. I honestly could see both the Jays and the Yankees passing Orioles and Rays. I mean, Rays will be tough. They're more legit than Orioles for sure. But I could see it being a dogfight between the Yankees, Jays, and Rays for the top three the entire way to the end. But yeah, maybe the Orioles, that young talent was better than we all thought. Hey, sometimes drafting high for 10 straight years pays off. So maybe that's what this Orioles team's been doing.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, I got to watch a lot more teams like that to say that. But it was always going to be a dogfight. So
absolutely, and it's panning out that way. But we've got to give some flowers to Yusei Kikuchi, pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. Obviously, last year he was brought in. I think it was that a 3-year, $36 million deal or something similar to that.
Yeah,
but right. They brought him in to pitch at the bottom of the rotation, and he was a gas can. He was terrible last season. They sent him down, obviously had him in a bit of a reliever role. He comes back this season and he really whips it out. He's 4-0 in his first five starts. He's looked just fantastic. He looks like he's got his command back. So that's really exciting for Blue Jays fans. Really been the most consistent pitcher out of the Jays rotation so far. And just finally in the MLB, Justin, what's going to go on with this Oakland Athletics franchise? They're off to a 5-20 start. Their fan attendance is the lowest in the MLB right now with just around 11,000 fans. They've announced that they've purchased, or the owners have purchased, land in Las Vegas. I mean, are we in for like just three really grim years in Oakland before they get this team relocated?
100%. I mean, this team's going to Vegas. It's the right move and probably the only move for them. It had to be done. The Raiders obviously moved up to Oakland. They've gone to Vegas, and I think that if you ask them, that's probably the best move they could have ever done for that team. Vegas is the place to be for sports, and getting a team in there is like a lottery ticket, I feel like. And this Oakland ownership made the right move. Kind of a hypothetical here. I want to run this by you. Kyler Murray was offered a lot of money to go to this Athletics organization. He's playing with the Cardinals and what they are right now, and ACL injury. I know he's got paid the bag, but what if we kind of reverse the clock and he signs with the Athletics? Obviously chose not to because of what they are. But now looking here, maybe you would have had 15 years in Las Vegas on this Athletics team, getting paid that MLB money, maybe less injuries, less getting hit by 280-pound linemen every day. Like, I think my question is, if this team was in Vegas on that draft day for Kyler Murray, is he still going to the NFL?
I'll say yes. I just think the notoriety is, I'm a quarterback in the NFL or I'm a pitcher in the MLB. I just think that being a quarterback in the NFL is just holds more weight. I mean, how many starting pitchers are there in the MLB? You know, 100?
Yeah.
You know, more? 100
yeah,
plus?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only 32 guys. And if you're the guy like he is in Arizona, I think that that comes with a lot. But obviously, it's been a roller coaster ride for that guy, Kyler Murray. But yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, who knows what his decision would have been if that team was in a little bit better of a spot. And just finally, in the PGA Tour, we gave out some best bets, and I just checked. Leader right now, Tony Finau, is leading the event. That was Justin's best bet at plus 800, so hopefully you guys hit that. I only gave out one best bet. We called in friend of the show, Jack Archer, to give a few. I was on Aaron Rye at plus 5,000. It's not looking too fantastic. He's one under right now, but this field is very weak. It's not going to be one to check in. It's going to be just a leaderboard kind of check-in type of week on the PGA Tour. I'm not going to be watching any of it, but I'll be watching closely now that Tony Finau at plus 800 is in the lead, because this guy, I mean, he's certainly one of the highlight reel golfers in this tournament, one of the more established players, and if he gets off to a lead here, especially in the second round, I could see him getting the job done over the weekend, and that's a nice little ticket to cash that we gave out.
Yeah, not much to add. Tony Finau hopefully makes me look good again. Only guy to watch out for, Finau is minus four through eight holes, and he's dash 10. John Rahm tees off at 2:30. He's six strokes back, but if these guys are putting four under on nine holes, maybe this guy goes six or seven. So, it'd be fun to watch Finau and Rahm go at it, but that's about it in this playoff. So hopefully Finau makes us look good.
Absolutely. Well, folks, listen, it's been our pleasure. Make sure you guys are liking and five-starring the episodes on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you listen. Make sure you're subbed to the YouTube, following on TikTok, following on Instagram. Make sure you go check out the Twitter as well. But Justin, it's always a pleasure. We'll be back on Monday. But listen, everybody, enjoy your weekends.
Hey, let's see it. Leafs, Oilers, figure it out. Come on now. We'll see how it goes. Thanks, Greg.